We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
From the shores of Malibu, where the waves are pumping, to the Great Wall of China, and back to the streets of Las Vegas, where the UFC is coming. We are live. This is It's Time Radio, the show we talk about what you think about, but may be afraid to voice. It's the lifestyle show of the internet. No holds barred radio, folks. We talk about it all. Politics, film, TV, UFC, boxing, sex, drugs, rock and roll. You name it, we'll talk about it. I'm here today with my co-host and producer, TJ DeSantis. TJ, how are you?
Hi, Bruce. You remember when boxing was a bad word for MMA fans? Like, they just couldn't accept both sports.
I remember when boxing was a bad word for everybody except for me. Because I love boxing. But you're absolutely correct. I remember when boxing was a bad word. I remember when MMA and UFC was and still is a bad word for people like Jim Lampley and a couple others that will not, you know, step out of their boxing mode to appreciate the full reality of the beauty of MMA. And hopefully Jim does by now. It's been one of those things like this, you know, no matter how you cut it, before we bring our guests on, the UFC came along in the 80s and the 90s and the early 2000s. Boxing was the water cooler conversation on a Monday at the office.
Sure.
And let's face it, the UFC took that over, with the exception of the three or four amazing, big, huge boxing events that happen every year that people tune into. And I'm not talking about Jake Paul and all those. I'm talking about real quality boxing. And we're lucky enough today to reinvigorate boxing in the minds of the MMA fans watching, because the Marcus of Queensbury rules, two weapons, the sweet science is still one of the most beautiful, poetic dance move sports in the world.
Oh yeah.
There's no question. And what we have on now, and I want to bring on the guests, is a man who I've worked with for over 20 years, with Michael Buffer, my legendary brother. A man who is the manager of the famous Klitschko brothers, champions amongst many, many others, and a man who paved the way for a lot of people in boxing, and that's Tom Loeffler. Tom, how are you?
Thanks, Bruce. Thanks for having me on. It's great to be on. It was great to see you last weekend at UFC 285. What a tremendous show and a tremendous energy you brought, but always, it's nice to be. This is the first time I've actually been on your podcast. Like you said, we've known each other for over 20 years, and I'm happy to be on the podcast for the first time.
Well, I'm happy to have you on. God knows you and I could talk about so much over the last 20 years in the heyday of boxing and beyond. But we want to talk about the modern upcoming boxing, because names are beginning to bring boxing back into the minds of not just the boxing fans that are out there and will always be there, but UFC fans, mixed martial arts fans. If you're a fight fan, you need to appreciate it. And with that, I want to bring on a young man who's undefeated, 5-0, 4 KOs, coming to us from Cork, Ireland. And we all know him. And those who don't know him will know him, because he's going to make a big statement coming up and more statements in the future, having that belt wrapped around his waist. King Callum Walsh. Hi, King. How are you?
All right, Bruce. How are you? Thanks very much for having me.
Very, very good. Very good. Thank you for coming on. You know, Callum, you're a six-time Irish national champion. You're a European champ, a gold medalist. You're 5-0, 4 KOs. Two of those KOs are inside the first round. You're 22 years old. You're not even in your prime yet, but you are in your prime, but you're not in your prime. I'd like to pull a whole syringe out of you and put it in my own body, because that's what all of us want at 22 years old. You're training with probably what many people would consider one of, if not the greatest coach boxing has ever seen, in Freddie Roach, a fine human being and just a hell of a coach. You're sponsored. Now, here's the thing. People out there, UFC fans, I want you to hear this out. Callum is making such a spot in the world and such an impression in boxing that Dana White and Howard Head are your sponsors.
That's right.
And if that doesn't say something, I don't know what does, you know. And you've even trained with MMA fighter Tony Ferguson, haven't you?
Yeah, I trained with Tony.
And when you trained with Tony, were you training him with him in boxing?
Yeah, we train boxing mostly. He comes to the wild card and we do some sessions there, but sometimes I'll go down to where he lives to his gym and we'll do a bit of MMA. So
very cool. Very cool. And you know, you're going to be facing an orthodox striker,
a southpaw striker,
which is always difficult. You know, they step on your feet, they move around. When you train with Freddie and training with a southpaw, for your upcoming fight with a southpaw boxer, which by the way is a 10-round fight, March 16th in Boston, that you took on short notice. And when I say short notice, how long ago did you take this fight?
I knew I was going to fight in Boston all along, but then my opponent broke his hand. So I think we just had a new opponent just the other day. So I think it was like 9 days notice for the new opponent.
You've been training for the event.
Yeah.
It's funny how that works out, though, because even though Callum was, you know, preparing for an opponent in a fight on March 16th, which, by the way, you can watch on UFC Fight Pass, you know, it goes both ways. Even though his opponent is taking this fight on short notice, Callum still has that sort of, you know, upheaval as well. Like, yeah, he's in shape and, you know, getting prepared to fight. But, you know, Bruce, you mentioned, you know, fighting a southpaw when you're preparing for an orthodox fighter, I mean, that changes everything. And you don't have that entire camp to get ready for a completely different strategy.
Which leads me to my next question. Listen, I was never a pro, but I trained my ass off in kickboxing and other sports for 12 years, sparring heavily, little smokers here and there and all that kind of stuff. But the one thing I did in kickboxing, kicks and punches both, is I trained to fight from both sides, right? So I could switch up. Does Freddie work with you on that? Or are you strictly regular foot when you box?
Yeah, no, Freddie definitely teaches me to box from both sides. And growing up, actually back in Ireland, my main sparring partner for years was actually a southpaw. So I find it, you know, very easy to fight southpaws. And as you mentioned a while ago with them stepping on your foot and all that kind of stuff, Freddie has taught me a lot of tricks for the pro style with people standing on your foot. So I think I'll be all right.
Good. Okay, then we recognize it. That's like one of the first major things. If you haven't fought a southpaw, you learn that real quick, right?
Yeah.
Which is cool. And Tom, the Boston show, you have your promotion here in LA, in Los Angeles, Hollywood Fight Nights, very appropriately titled. But you're taking it on the road now, right? This is your first time on the road?
This is the first time on the road for Hollywood Fight Nights. You know, we did all the fights with the Klitschkos on the East Coast, the Madison Square Garden and Triple G. But this is the first time I'm actually promoting in over 30 years, going to have a fight in Boston. So we're excited about that. Dana's gotten, like you mentioned, Dana's 100% behind Callum Welch. He wants to build boxing on UFC Fight Pass. Fight Pass has so much great combat sports content, but boxing never really took off. And now with Callum, Dana's really pushing the boxing and the shows that he's committed to having us promote. So we're excited to go into Boston. Freddie Roach hails from Boston. Dana naturally hails from Boston. Dana's going to be at the show for all you fight fans that want to see Dana live.
Very cool.
He's going to be at the show at the Aganis Arena March 16th. And we're excited to have Callum fight the day before St. Patrick's Day, the day before everyone gets drunk and hungover. Callum will be fighting, and then you can punch your way into St. Patrick's Day.
Wow, I just realized something. Callum's fighting March 18th. Dana's going to be there March 16th. We have a show in London, a big, huge pay-per-view on March 18th.
March 18th, yeah.
So Dana's going to be flying over on Friday after the show, if not that night, on his jet or whatever the case might be. And then I'm going to be in London during St. Patrick's Day. Holy geez. I think I actually fly out before everybody starts getting drunk on green beer and God knows doing what in the streets.
Bruce, we're going to be, so Callum fights on the 16th on Thursday, where Dana's going to be at the show. And then, like you said, Dana flies out for the weigh-ins in London, and we're going to fly out, if everything goes the right way, we're going to fly out Friday night, and we'll see you in London for the UFC London show.
Oh, that's perfect. Well, actually, wait, I'm taking this back. St. Patrick's Day is on Friday.
Yeah.
St. Patrick's Day is Friday. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Man, I'm like a nun before a show. I don't drink. I that might change on St. Patrick's Day if I go out in London.
I mean, when in Rome or London, I guess, Buff, you know,
do they, hey, Callum, you know, in America, they sometimes do this green beer thing on Irish, you know, on St. Patrick's Day, right? Does that happen back home?
Nah, green beer. No, I don't, I don't think so. I think everybody just drinks this, the normal stuff.
All right, good. Maybe it's where I grew up when I was younger. I don't know if they do that anymore, but I remember that. Maybe it's just a joke or whatever. Callum, when you were growing up, okay, You watched MMA, but you trained boxing because there was no MMA where you lived. If you think back, excuse me, not too far back, you're only 22, but if you think back, would you, and you had the ability to train MMA, would you have switched and taken the route to the UFC, or was boxing your calling?
You know, I always watch the UFC highlights, and I always watch UFC fights, and I always think to myself, I wish I was a UFC fighter. You know, I would have loved to be able to do it. But I do think the fact that I was put into boxing when I was 6 years old, from such a young age, and just developed the skills and, you know, everything at such a young age, that it was just the right decision to just stick with boxing. That I was good at it, and I don't know, I was naturally talented, so, you know, and I know how to win, you know, I've won a lot of fights, I've won a lot of championships, so yeah, I think boxing was the best decision for me.
Awesome, awesome. Well, you know what, with the quality manager and Tom that you have behind you, Tom, sponsorships, you know, deals outside when he puts his blood, sweat, and tears inside the squared ring, how's that coming along for Callum? Because I look at you, Callum, you're very marketable, you're a great-looking young man. Well-spoken, you know, these are all key things that you need to do. Handle yourself with class, keep that role model status, because sponsors look at that. Tom, you got people edging on Callum? Can you see making some nice little for Callum?
We already have two major sponsors for Callum, as you alluded to, Dana White and Howlerhead is the main sponsor for Callum. We also have Hustler Casino, where I've heard that you go down there every now and then for a poker game.
I've won six figures in tournament monies there. It's one of my favorite places. Yeah.
There you go. So yeah, so they're sponsoring him. And then naturally we're working on an apparel deal. Nike's interested in that. So yeah, we're, you know, my job, Bruce, is I'm actually promoting Callum, but my job is, you know, if we can get Callum money to put logos on his trunks without getting hit in the face, that's just icing on the cake for what our job is.
Absolutely. Callum, how's your social media going? Are you on social media?
Yeah, it's going well. Yeah, to be fair, since I started with Tom and Dana, and I think I've grown.
I got you right
Instagram.
Here.
Yeah, just on Instagram alone, I've grown up well over 100,000. So
yeah, you're over 100,000. You got a nice picture with Connor here. I see.
Yeah.
Hey, this is the first time you met Connor last weekend, right, Callum?
Yeah, that was crazy. Do you know, when Connor walked in, everybody was calling him, and I could see I was sitting two rows behind him, and I didn't expect him to know who I was. And I seen he turned around and he seen me and he gave me a fist bump, and I was like, fuck, Connor McGregor actually knew who I was. Like, I was sitting there thinking, what's going on?
Well, there you go.
That made his day for sure. Yeah,
that's amazing. Would make anybody's day at that point for sure. No, definitely. Yeah. Hey, let me ask you a question, Callum, as I'm asking you questions all during this interview. But in Ireland, with Conor McGregor, and which I love the way Conor handled himself. I just got done filming, and I can't talk about it, but I just got done filming a bit with Conor and Mike Chandler on the Tough show that they're doing, The Ultimate Fighter. Had a chance to spend some time with Conor, and it's been a while since he and I have actually, you know, talked face-to-face about certain things. Back home, I know Conor's really popular, but with some of the stuff that he's done off color that, you know, affected his image in certain ways, I've heard that like there's like a 50-50 split or a 60-40 split, you know, fans liking and loving Conor, although they'll all buy the pay-per-view to watch him fight, right?
Yeah.
Is that kind of the way it is back there?
Yeah, I think, you know, well, when I was growing up anyway, I've been watching McGregor since I was 12 years old, since his UFC debut.
Right.
So I think all people my age, all young people, everybody loves him, you know, because we don't care about all that mad stuff that he was doing, you know, when he was attacking buses and all that shit. So young people like me, we don't care, like, because, you know, that's funny, it's entertaining. But I think a lot of like the older people, like the older didn't
you
like
say
them.
It all parts like me. It's okay, Cal.
Yeah, you know, that kind of them kind of people were didn't like it. But I think when like, I don't know. I think a lot of people do like him. I think more people like him than don't like him. But even the people that don't like him, as you said, will still buy the pay-per-views. You know what I mean? Because he puts on such a good show.
Yeah, he does. And, you know, speaking of that good show, he's going to be against Michael Chandler coming up. What are they talking, TJ? We're talking October or something, I think, until that fight happens.
Yeah, I mean, the show's got to finish filming, and then it's got to obviously air for, you know, 12 weeks. So, yeah. 3 months after the debut of the show is when you're, you know, approximately expecting to have those guys take the octagon.
Right. Well, you know, not only did you get to meet Conor McGregor, but you also got an experience that, you know, Tom and I have seen, whether it's Rocky or some other films that have filmed at events. How did you like the factor? Were you there when Jake Gyllenhaal, you know, got in the octagon, had the walk in, and you saw the fight coordination? You know, we had that 20-25 minute segment where they filmed all that. Did you get to see that, Colin?
Yeah, I was sitting there for that, actually. I didn't know what was going on, and then I realized it was Roadhouse. But when he kept announcing him, I was like, why are they announcing the fight like 3 or 4 times?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was on the air. Callum stopped by extra rounds. I was on the air with Vanessa Demopoulos and Chase Hooper, and I knew that the last prelim had taken place. But I hear you, Bruce, in the background doing introductions, and I'm like, who the heck is fighting? They're not starting the pay-per-view early, are they? But, you know, I mean, obviously it played out like it did.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. And, talking about that for a second, let me give you a little past history on this. We were supposed to film that scene at the UFC December 4th in Las Vegas. So Jake got COVID, which closed down the production.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know, I'm sorry, I might have just let the cat out of the bag, but that's Jake got COVID. That's what happened. So they shut down the production. We couldn't film. They filmed at the weigh-ins on Friday and the show on Saturday. But this is Hollywood. Okay, now get this. The film's in the can. It's done. They had to come back. Jake Gyllenhaal's already on another movie, acting in another movie.
Oh,
he
wow.
came back literally 3 months after when he should have filmed, ripped and shredded.
Yeah, he's still in fight shape. My goodness.
Yeah, so think about that. Think that's, and that's an actor, okay? But think about it, closing down production, starting it off. They had to pay the UFC a boatload of money for the time they spent, and it all went off really well. As a matter of fact, I think we have a video we'll show here, but I had an encounter because I hadn't seen Conor in a while. And then I saw Conor, greeted Conor. And in this video, you can see how down to earth Jake Gyllenhaal is, right? Not because he calls me cool. That's beside the point. But that, you know, obviously that's a little bit. No, he's just really down to earth. He's just a really cool guy. You know, Tom, you and I've met tons of people in Hollywood. And yeah. For the most part, many of them are kind of disappointing at times because you're envisioning their image that shows you on the screen. Jake Gyllenhaal is one of the nicest actors I've ever met and very, very cool. So I like that. I like that. He loves what he did and he showed it. And he looked real, right, TJ? I think he looked the part.
Yeah, no, 100%. Like what I said, like when you said he was moving on to a different movie and coming backwards, like he's still in the shape that he needed to be in that film. And also, too, I think it's really important if you want authenticity and the UFC is willing to work with you and you're making a film, you got to take advantage of it. So to come back and do that, I mean, that could, you know, make or break the film if they, you know, get that scene or not.
Oh, absolutely. And I think the way it worked, it just went, it was kismet. It just went perfectly. Another little incident here, my fanboy moment, Callum, like you had yours with Conor. The great legendary Tom Brady, you know, the quarterback.
You mean Sean Shelby's cousin?
John Shelby's cousin. So you're going to Boston, you're going to the area where Tom spent his career, most of his career, most of his career, playing for the New England Patriots. So Tom, I'm at my desk, work, you know, doing my notes for the cards, and all of a sudden I look up and there's this guy in a hoodie over me, and it's Tom. And I stand up and he gives me a big hug and how you doing, which is always nice. You know, I called him the GOAT one time. And Tom, he called me the GOAT. My jaw almost dropped to hear Tom Brady say that. Tom Loeffler said it too. But you can't say that because you work with my brother too much. And we know my brother's the greatest of all time. So don't go there, Tom. But anyway, I went over, and this is funny. I think it's funny. My brother Brian's a huge collector, as I am, of sports memorabilia and a huge fan of Tom Brady. So I texted him that Tom Brady was here. And he goes, oh, if there's any chance to get me an autograph, right? Which I don't ask people for autographs, especially guys like Tom, because if they see him sign one, he's going to have to be asked. He's going to have to sign every one, right? I said, Brian, I don't know. I'll go over. So I went over to Tom at a key moment. And I said, Tom, would you mind signing me an autograph? You know, and I handed him a piece of paper. And I thought he's going to sign his name. And I was getting this from my brother. and he handed me back and it says, "Bruce, love you, man. Tom Brady."
So, hey, I mean, Bruce and Brian aren't that far apart. You could try to get creative with a Sharpie, you know.
I called Brian. I said, "Brian, if you want to cut off my name and just use that, it's okay. But I mean, honestly, I got to keep this. I got a picture of Tom and I. I'm going to frame it with one of his trading cards because, you know, it just make a nice little thing, yeah, you know.
Absolutely.
Can I just say, like, Bruce, you are lucky because, like, if I get a autograph and it's signed to, you know, to TJ, that's going to devalue said autograph. But a Tom Brady autograph to Bruce Buffer might actually increase its value.
Well, on the other side, thank you. I'll let you say that, not me. But on the other side of the paper, he was sitting next to Mark Wahlberg. So Mark and I were talking, and I was telling him about, you know, like my puncher's chance bourbon, which, by the way, Callum, do you drink?
Sometimes I try not to, but
Not now, but I have the puncher's chance bourbon, which is what you're all about, you know, puncher's chance. And we're the top five best sipping bourbon in America at its price range, not according to me, but according to the critics. And we won 6 gold medals. So I was telling Mark Wahlberg about it because he has his tequila. Now, let me tell you how cool Mark Wahlberg is. So Mark Wahlberg on the other side of this autograph, it says Mark Wahlberg, and he gave me his phone number because he wanted me to send him my address so he could send me some of his new tequila that he makes. And he wants my bourbon. And you know what he said? This is how cool. He goes, "Hey, send it to me. I'll put it out on social media. You put out mine." He goes, "That's the way we roll." He doesn't have to do that, you know? Down to earth. Very
yeah,
cool.
He's a Boston guy too.
Yeah, absolutely.
He better be.
Yeah.
he's certainly been filmed enough doing it. Yeah, no, he's a big boxing guy for sure.
No, Boston guy, but he's a boxing guy.
And boxing. Yeah, yeah. No, he's a big Boston guy.
You know, speaking of boxing in Boston, March 16th, Callum Walsh.
That's right.
Callum Walsh. Hey, Tom, where's Callum on the card? How does he, where, how many fights on the card? Where'd you place your boy on the card?
No, Callum's the main event. He's been the main event since he's fought on UFC Fight Pass. This will be his fifth main event.
Awesome.
And as you mentioned, social media has grown tremendously. I just wanted to add one more story from last weekend. We were with TJ on Friday night when he was filming, and we got to meet the great legendary Hall of Fame UFC fighter, Don Fry. And that was,
oh,
that was
what a character and a half.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah.
My first UFC, full UFC 10, was Don Fry's first UFC.
Okay.
Wow. I've been doing this for over 27 years. Yeah. And that you just brought back another piece of trivia.
That was awesome.
My first full show was Don Fry. You know, never forget him standing in the corner, hands on his waist, that mustache of his. And he just went through people like Grant went through Richmond, man.
You know, bringing it full circle, speaking of bourbon, Don Fry sounds like he drank all the bourbon. I mean,
there's a man now I got to text Don. There's a man I definitely have to send punchers to. He'll appreciate it very, very, very
much.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know who else I saw in the audience, too? Speaking of Don Fry was the Hammer, Mark Coleman.
Oh, Mark Coleman. Yeah.
So he came up to me and he's like, "Hey, Bruce, this, that, and the other." And he kind of gave me a shot. He goes, "Don't get me back. We're not in an elevator. It's all good."
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. Hilarious. Going back to that Frank Trigg story.
But you know, Mark, hip replacement? No, he had a heart attack, right?
He's had a whole slew of medical issues, but you know, happy to say he's healthy now. He's at a lot of the UFC events, you know, loving life. You know, he's you know, found sobriety later in life, which he, you know, attributes to sort of, you know, his health and recovery from everything that he's gone through. And it's just great to see guys like Don Fry, like Mark Coleman, you know, these old school UFC guys that honestly competed at a time where mixed martial arts was a different sport altogether. It's not what it is today, but those guys were the founding fathers, if you will, and, you know, put the building blocks into what we have today is mixed martial arts. And, you know, I'm happy every time I see those guys doing well.
I am too. Tom, Callum's future, lay it out for me as his manager. I know you think 2-3 steps ahead. Okay. What is your basic goal for Callum in the next year? Title belt? What's going to go on?
Yeah, it's a fine line, Bruce. He's definitely on the fast track. This is his first 10-round fight, which is with only 6 fights. This is he's going in with 5 fights. So his 6th fight, he's going to be fighting 10 rounds. He's already headlined, as I mentioned. This will be his 5th time headlining UFC Fight Pass. We're going to look for a regional title for him this year. And then, you know, he's on the fast track. You know, there's, as I mentioned, there's a fine line between you want him to learn with every fight, but you don't want to overmatch him. But Freddie is very confident. He's told me, and that's how Callum really came on our radar, is that Callum's one of the most talented young fighters he's ever seen. He's got so much amateur experience and such, you know, charismatic personality, like you said, on social media, that I think he's really what we did with Triple G. I think we can really do now that I started working with Triple G at 30 and Callum's only 22. So with his Irish fans, with the background that he has, Freddie Roach in his corner, I really think the sky's the limit for Callum. He needs to do what he does in the ring best, knock people out. And, you know, we'll open the doors outside the ring for him.
I love it. So, Callum, question to you. 4 knockouts, what's your knockout punch?
My knockout punch, yeah, it's always been the left hand, either the overhand left or the left hand to the body. I think it was being in all my fights nearly, it was a overhand left.
So do you have a good left cross?
Yeah.
Okay, well, there's my other puncher's chance. I named it after you. That's my 14-year reserve. I even got green on it there, Callum. Come on, nice. It's time to take a sip.
I'll have to get a bottle of it.
No problem. Tom, Callum lives in L.A.?
Yeah, he's in L.A. He's actually in Hollywood, so he's close to the gym at Wild Card. And he's fought all of his fights on the West Coast here in L.A., and this will be the first time on the East Coast. And then, you know, we're really want to develop them on the East Coast. Actually, the guys from Madison Square Garden, who we have a great relationship with, they're coming up extra to Boston to watch Callum fight, because the plan would be at the end of the year for Callum to fight at the MSG Theater. Actually,
wow.
The day before the UFC fight, November 11th, I'm talking to Dana about having Callum fight at the theater on Friday night, November 10th.
Well, you know, if that's the case, I'll get in early and I'll attend the fight.
At the Garden, yeah.
Yeah, no, we'll definitely attend the fight. Maybe I'll even announce it for you, Tom. I'll walk out and do the main event. I don't think Dana would have any problem with me walking out and announcing Callum. Actually, you know what? That's not a bad idea, Tom. I don't want to step on Joe's toes, but, you know, that's not a bad idea. If Dana proved that, then we can talk about that. Okay.
I'm allowed to do boxing.
I can do boxing whenever I want, but I still pass by the chief. Okay.
What's exciting though. Oh, go ahead, Tom.
Oh, no. I was just saying you get a pass because it's UFC fight weekend. So it ties in with the boxing.
Completely. Yeah. Callum, I've seen a lot of young fighters groomed by Tom and others. And everything I'm hearing is following a pattern, and a pattern that's going to be basic. Like, are you excited about all the money that's in your future? I mean, it's going to start pouring rain, my man, you know,
I can't wait until it does. You know what I mean? Well, to be fair, it's never been about money for me, but
you get your first $1 million payday. What's the first thing you buy, Callum? What's the first thing in your head that you want to do? I'm not talking so much about whether it's for you or whatever, house for mom, whatever the case. What's the first thing that you have a goal to do when you get that loose change?
The first thing I'd buy right now is a car. So my car just broke down, so I'd buy a car. But I'd say if I...
Buy a what?
A car.
Oh, car. What kind of car?
If I had $1 million, I'd say... Yeah, you probably won't see me for a week.
Okay. Keep that week off social media.
You know what I like about Callum, Bruce, is honestly, when it's not about money, that's when you know you're doing the right thing with your life. You know.
Thank you, TJ, because you just took the words out of my mouth. He answered the thing perfectly.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's follow your passion, Callum. Money will follow. You monetize your passion, you'll make more money than you ever dreamed. Okay? That's all I can tell you. Mm-hmm. So keep following that thing. Speaking of making more money, I don't know if you heard about it or not, but the UFC continues to generate record revenues for Endeavor, the parent company that bought it for $4.2 billion. They led the sports properties last year. They did $1.3 billion in revenue, Tom. They're up $224.1 million from 2021, right? It's incredible. And we hold the record. Now, this is what's really cool. We're heading off to London next week, right? So they set 11 arena records for the highest grossing events for those arenas around the world. 4 of them were fight nights in the U.S. and they were two of the highest fight nights at grossing in UFC history. But the other two were at London's O2 Arena.
Wow. That's awesome.
That's awesome. Yep. So awesome.
Hey, that's a strong brand. And Dana's really, you know, such a visionary with UFC so successful, but he always brings something else, to take it to a whole different level. And
what, like slap fight?
Yeah. Well, that's just one example, but you know, with Owlerhead or anything he touches.
Oh yeah, no, he's
he's
proven to have his Midas touch. And Owlerhead, he and I were talking about it the other day when I was working the Ultimate Fighter show. Howard has success for me. I was telling him how we're doing punchers. Howard has a huge success. Yeah. You know, it's probably already got a value. It's already been bought out by, I think, Campari. I think bought a huge.
They bought a portion of it. Yeah, they bought a portion of it, and that's why, you know, with HBO being out of the picture, I was talking to one of the big boxing writers, and you know, they were comparing a Triple G to the trajectory that we have Callum on, and they said, yeah, but Triple G, you built him on HBO and everybody tuned into HBO. I said, you don't understand the reach of the UFC brand, you know, over 35 million followers on Instagram. And if Dana White gives an interview, everyone tunes into it. And, you know, it's just, we're really excited about the green light that Dana's given us to promote boxing on UFC Fight Pass. And I really think, especially internationally and worldwide, that people can tune in. You know, HBO was North America here, but you know, UFC Fight Pass, you know, all of Callum's fans in Ireland can tune in, you know, and any of the other international fighters that are fighting on the show. It's a great blessing to have the green light from Dana to be on UFC Fight Pass.
On that tip real quick, you know, the thing about Fight Pass, you know, I being a hardcore mixed martial arts fan, when they announced the you know, launch of Fight Pass, I was excited just to have the UFC library at my fingertips. And then they added a live event in Invicta. Invicta was the first live event partner that they had. And then they started, you know, adding more mixed martial arts events, which was exciting for me because, you know, I love everything that we see on pay-per-view. But like I said, I'm a hardcore fan. I like to see the route that athletes take to the octagon. And then they started adding grappling. And, you know, if you're a fan of mixed martial arts, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, it's not for everybody, but you know, it's something that you can appreciate. And then it was kickboxing, and now it's boxing, and that's the one thing. Like, yes, it's branded UFC Fight Pass, but it's really this one-stop shop for combat sports. And you could look at boxing right now and talk about, you know, maybe the potential growth that Jake Paul has had on the sport, but it's a spectacle. I, again, being a hardcore, not only mixed martial arts fan, but a combat sports fan, I appreciate what Fight Pass is doing with someone like Callum, because it's bringing up a prospect the proper way, you know. And I feel like, you know, you, Callum, are benefiting from that, but combat sports fans as a whole, I mean, you already have the entire UFC fan base involved with Fight Pass. Now you get boxing, and all of a sudden UFC Fight Pass goes from the streaming platform to kind of what you're saying, Tom, and it has the potential to be much bigger than, say, you know, doing a fight on HBO.
Absolutely. TJ, you hit it right on the head. That's exactly what the plan is: to cross market the boxing fans that are tuning in to watch Callum fight and the gigantic UFC fan base. And one of the things that Dana loved, he came to two of our shows last year here in Los Angeles. And one of the things that he loved was every fight was exciting. You know, I know the UFC fans are very critical of boxing, and we have to put on an exciting show. Every fight that's on UFC Fight Pass has to be exciting. Otherwise they'll tune out. And so far, you know, we've got some of the highest ratings the boxing's done on UFC Fight Pass, and we're excited to have Callum spearheading that movement.
You know, the UFC provides a catapulting process for a lot of things, whether it's Hollywood fight nights, fighters getting their sponsorships, staying relevant, being part of the UFC. Myself, you know, it just allows what I call the sweet smell of success. Okay. Right there. So let me just say,
do I need to put a disclaimer at the beginning of the show that said the following program is a paid program for
Bruce Buffer's product? Let me just say that the sweet smell of success. You know? Why? Because thank you, Dana. It's time, it's right? Available on Amazon.com. Here we go. Hey. And stores near you soon. Anyway, all kidding aside, but not kidding aside. Listen, this is the beauty of marketing. Callum, that's why you want to listen to Tom, okay? It's not just about your fights, all right? Proper direction in the areas that are going to make you as much, potentially, if not even more money than your boxing career, will be the ancillary things that come out of the base you create with the brand of King Callum Walsh.
Yeah.
Right. So listen to Tom. I'm vouching for Tom. I know Tom. I expect the paycheck in the mail, Tom, for what I'm saying. So listen to Tom. Okay, Callum, you do what you do best. Get in there, train hard, train safe, and win, and let this man direct your career. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Definitely.
Appreciate that, Bruce. We need everyone to tune in March 16th.
There you go. Boston, March 16th, King Callum Walsh. See it. Be there. Say hi to Dana White. Do the whole number. Tom, it's a pleasure having you on the show. We go back so, so far.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
No, it's great to be on the show, Bruce. And always great to see you. Always a pleasure to see you live at the events and happy to be on the podcast, like I said.
I know I jump around a little more than my brother, so I hope it doesn't drive you crazy.
That's why you have to stretch before the...
That's it, baby. Come on, 65. I got some rickets going on here. I got to keep those things limber. Well, all right, Cal.
No one does it like you do with the spins and the you know, fist bumping the fighters and everything like that. It's tremendous.
Thank you, Tom. I'm going to give it my all until I go, it's time. Right through the octagon. Done.
I mean, I don't want to I mean, I don't want
to
celebrate your death, but damn, that would just be so fitting and sweet in the way you'd want to go out too.
Bring an epic. Bring an epic. Anyway, no time soon, please.
Right.
Callum, true pleasure to meet you. Wishing you all the best success, right? Possibly I'll announce your Madison Square Garden fight. We'll see how that works out. And I had to throw it out there, Tom.
That's great. That would be tremendous.
I'll just walk out. I won't even go. I'll just walk out right at the main event. It's not about me. It's about Callum, but I'm going to add as much excitement as I can. You let me choreograph that situation with you, Tom.
Yeah.
And it ain't show business. It's show biz, baby. You know what I'm saying?
100%.
All right. That's all I'm saying. Good. I'll expect your offer soon. Callum, take care. All right. Get your rest.
Thanks very much for having me. Thank you.
22 years old. God, the future is his oyster. Yeah. Between the money and the pretty girls are going to want to say, hi, Callum.
hopefully they start soon.
Yeah, we all know about that week off, Callum. Okay, we won't even talk about it, right? All right, my friend. Listen, enjoy yourself. Take care of yourself. And be respectful and true to everybody around you. And be a role model to your sphere of influence, like I like to say on the show. And the world is your oyster, young man. It is your oyster.
Yeah, thank you.
Big cheers. I'll see you
soon. See you guys.
Thanks.
All right, cheers.
Bye, Tony. Thanks, Bruce.
You got it.
All right, there we go.
Very cool. You know, it's always a nice shot in the arm to meet a young man like that, you know, going for his dreams in this fight world. I mean, we were lucky enough to have Trevor Peak on the other week.
Right.
Now we have the boxing aspect of a Trevor Peak who shows the same kind of, you know, pure innocence and just like it's just there.
I like what you say. I mean, it's true. It's sort of innocent love and passion that, you know, get these guys into, you know, combat sports. And it is a business of like any other business. As you stay in it for, you know, longer periods of time, it's going to feel more like a job, right? Like it's going to weigh on you a little bit, and that innocence and sort of just love for the process is going to go away. Like I said to Trevor last week, you know, you might enjoy appearance number one on its time, but don't get mad when we call you and hit you up for appearance number seven. But it is fun to talk to these, you know, young men and women in combat sports before they realize their max potential, because it's just fun to see where they are in their own journey. And I think I can speak for you on this as well. It kind of fuels our own journeys as well, because, you know, we do this as a business, but when you're doing it with people that truly love what they're doing, it rubs off on you.
Agreed. And it also fuels my fire to keep moving forward. Totally. I might get a little sweaty while I'm moving forward, but I have a little help. Hold on, man. Let's get there. We are. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
All right. So where do we get this?
It's all out. You'll see it. All right. It's all in the next 5 weeks. It's all out. You're going to get your care package, TJ.
I can't wait.
Yeah. Don't worry.
I can't wait.
Hey, listen, you know those Funko Pop collectibles?
Yeah.
This happens at times, you know, people are holding on to Funko, those dolls.
Yeah. Right? My wife has a whole bunch of like Disney ones.
Yeah, there's Disney, Star Wars, even a couple UFC ones out there. I was waiting for them to we were talking potentially one of myself, I would love to have one, but here's what's happening. The inventory they have is filled the company's warehouses to the brim. Okay. So now they're forced to rent storage containers to hold the excess product.
Right.
So now what happens is the product's worth less than it costs to keep on hand. So from a business standpoint, it's not a proper thing. So by the end of the year, right, of last year, they had a total of $246 million worth of product.
Oh, wow.
Sitting in storage.
Yeah.
Right.
How much was it costing to keep?
They're not going to keep it.
Yeah, I didn't expect them to.
They're going to dump it.
Which is good for collectors because that's going to, you know, make the...
It'll make what's out there worth more.
Right. But, I mean, when you were describing it to me, it sounded similar to what we talked about in the past was baseball cards in the 90s, where they just kept printing and printing and printing. And, you know, it just wasn't worth the paper that they were printing it upon. And a lot of people save that stuff to find out 20 years later it's worth less than, you know, they paid for it back in the 90s.
Exactly. So what they're going to do is they're going to basically dump $30 to $36 million of the product to make room because it's not cost effective to keep it.
Yeah. No, I
get
that.
Can't just throw it out in the marketplace and give it away because then you interfere with your sales.
Right. Yeah. And I think if consumers of those collectibles, you know, hear that they're going down in value simply because they're flooding the market, they're less likely to, you know, keep buying new releases and things like that. So smart move. I mean, it probably sucks for their bottom line, but, you know, you got to stay relevant. You got to stay true to the idea of collectability and it'll work out.
Exactly. By the way, here, this is a very offbeat story and we're going to go into some sports stories. Okay.
Right.
And normally Sammy would be on the show for this one, but an artifact was unearthed in 1992 in a ditch at the Roman fort of Vindolanda. Right.
Okay.
Which basically is Northern England, which marked the Roman Empire's frontier, you know, where they were doing a lot of stuff.
Sure.
They misidentified the tool that was found alongside dozens of shoes and dress accessories and other small tools and products. Now they've decided what it is.
Hmm.
It's actually a carved object that's 6.3 inches long that they figure was used as a sex tool.
Okay.
Like what would be known today as a...
Yeah.
Yeah,
right. I got
a sex object. So they've now discovered and found out that 2,000 years ago, they used sex objects in.
Well, I mean, is that shocking?
That's not.
I don't think it's shocking. I mean, like if prostitution is the oldest industry in the world,
then obviously it was.
Right,
and it does look like a phallus.
Okay,
when all you look at it. So I mean, that's all I'm going to say.
That's a fantastic, proper yet dirty word, phallus.
Exactly.
Good job, Buff.
So usually we talk about, you know, dinosaur bones, set of things. Well, okay, we changed. So let's get into the sports news. There's a few items here we have to talk about.
Yeah.
Sean Kemp.
Mm-hmm.
The great basketball
player. Yeah, Seattle
He's
Supersonic.
Been arrested for firing shots in public.
Why?
Supposedly some kind of an argument ensued.
So was it at someone?
Yes.
See, I mean, here's the issue. Like, it's one thing to be charged for, like, discharging a firearm in public. It's another thing to be doing it at someone because you can be charged for attempted murder.
They claim that he claims he was defending himself, that the other driver caused it. It obviously all has to come out in the wash. But, you know, Kemp was arrested. And it was just a few weeks ago we talked about Willie McGinnis.
Right. Here's the issue, though, Buff. Like, it's not, I mean, I'm not going to knock anyone for legally carrying a firearm. That's one thing that I don't know if the story, if they talk about whether or not he was legally allowed to carry a weapon, but guys, nothing happens in your car on the roadway that is worth shooting someone or getting shot over.
Well, we don't know the full story yet. You're absolutely correct in what you're saying. And we don't know the full story yet. And on that note, road rage is a horrible thing. Just look at that, all the incidents that happen. I don't want to point out anything individual.
No, you don't want to get involved. Outside of being late, I don't really drive that aggressively, especially here in LA, because you just kind of have to accept what you're getting into, right? Like, you know, there are certain off-peak hours where you don't expect traffic. You still hit traffic and, you know, get a podcast, download, you know, a few episodes of It's Time and just enjoy your ride.
Exactly. Willie McGinnis.
Yeah.
Okay. He's been charged.
What's the charge?
Willie McGinnis is seriously facing two felony charges. He's facing serious time behind bars.
Okay.
Each charge carries up to 4 years in prison.
How many?
Arraigned in April. Pardon me?
How many charges?
Two. So he's looking at 8 years in prison.
So okay, so he wouldn't probably get that. But what are the charges?
The charges here are, let me see here.
Because, I mean, that's the thing, too. If these charges are...
One count of assault with a deadly weapon, one count of assault by means of force likely to cause great bodily injury, which, if you remember, we picked up that bottle and smashed it in his face.
Right. I mean, those are felonies. This is not going to be reduced. He might not go to jail for 8 years, but this is not going to go away.
I hate to say this, but then again, you play, you pay. He's going to go to jail.
Right. I expect
he doesn't go to jail. I'm going to take Willie out, who's been a friend of mine, but I'm very disappointed that this happened.
Right.
Right. In him.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I hate to say this, Willie, if you're listening, you know, by any chance, but in the world that we live in today, if you get off
for
something like this, something's really wrong.
Right. And unfortunately, it sets a precedent as well, whether or not it's a celebrity that gets off or, you know, I mean, I hate to say it, but in those moments, there's not a lot of thought, but you hope that someone hears about someone going to jail over being too angry and violent and aggressive in a situation that could be diffused. And maybe that alone stops them from doing something stupid that could land them in a similar spot. There's a reason that we have these penalties. It's not necessarily, I mean, it is definitely one part to punish the people that have done wrong, but it is also another part preventing someone else from making the same mistake.
Agreed. Agreed. Tiger Woods, you know, you don't always have to get married. You can live with a woman, right?
Right.
But
I think everyone should live with their potential spouse before they get married personally.
I think it'd be a good idea if you really see it down the road. But then again, if you're just not even in marriage mind and you're spending the rest of your life together, like Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell, you know, it comes in different things, but it does come with consequences if you break up.
Oh, absolutely.
Tiger Woods' 6-year relationship with his lady.
Yeah.
Without going into details why, she just filed a lawsuit against him. She wants $30 million.
I understand that. You know, my wife and I, we bought a house together before we got married. And I said straight up, like, this is like, if we break up, this is going to be as messy as if we were getting a divorce. So getting married doesn't really change anything from a, you know, sense of we can just break up and everything will be smooth and clean. Like, no, like, we own a house together. We have a mortgage together. So it's like, you got to think about those things. Like, you know, don't get me wrong. This is probably one of the oddest pieces of advice my father ever gave me, but I believe it's one of the most honest and something true that I received and value. He said, don't necessarily marry the woman that drives you crazy and you fall head over heels for. Marry the woman that is, you know, capable of being your best friend and the person that you want to deal with things like buying a house or trying to figure out how to, you know, raise a kid and do the educational things and things like that. Because while falling head over heels for someone and having amazing sex and all of that is great, at the end of the day, it's going to wear off and you need to have more of a business partner than a spouse in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it's a diminishing return. So it better be at the absolute height of excitement when you first meet.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, if you can find both, that's great too. So
it depends on the individual. Some people can maintain that, but then again, you don't know until you know.
Right. And you know, I hate to say it, but we're human beings, and most married couples that have been together for a long time, that fire is going to, you know, die down. It should never go out. Don't get me wrong. It should never go out.
But, how many times a week, TJ?
That is none of your business, Buffer. You know, one thing that is hard though, and I think that, you know, you probably have experienced this in your longer term relationships. It is hard to find the time when you're on the road constantly. March, I'm on the road, I think 3 out of the 5 weekends, and it's split up to where it's like right now, I just got back from UFC 285. And while I'm home for an entire week, I'm still kind of catching up on what I missed last week. And then I'm going to Boston for Callum's fight Sunday to Friday. And it's just like, it's very hard to figure out time for yourself or someone else.
I understand and resemble that remark, and I understand it.
I mean, but thank God, Bruce, thank God that's a problem we need to deal with, because that means money's coming, you know?
Yeah, money's coming in. I mean, like I mentioned, I've got the Toronto Blue Jays, and I said that earlier, right?
Yeah.
You know, then later on this year, I got to go to Singapore, come back, and 2 days later, go to London.
Yeah, I mean,
if I'm not mistaken.
And that's the thing.
No,
too.
Paris.
See, that's what's funny.
Listen to me. I got to go to Paris. See, that's where it doesn't sound right.
But,
you know?
But here's the issue. Like, people that are on the outside looking in, like, oh, he's bragging. Oh, I wish I had to do that. Yeah.
Not bragging.
Like, well, I understand what people are saying. I would love to go to Paris too. I love the fact I'm going to Boston, but I promise you, it is a lot harder than anyone thinks. Don't cry for us, as you always say, Bruce, but it's not the work that's even that difficult. It's the plane rides, the hotel rooms. You know, I'm very selective when it comes to what kind of bed I sleep in. I mean, I would say it's probably not a lot of the time. I'd say one out of four times I might end up sleeping on the couch that is in my hotel room.
Oh, I can't tell you how many times I wake up with a bad back.
Right. Or I'll just sleep on the floor. You know what I mean? Just to get aligned again, because the floor is a great sort of natural chiropractor. But the travel is kind of what I think I get paid for. The job is what I love, but the travel is kind of what you pay me for.
Hey, if people want to go to Singapore, have a good time, come back, and you want to land in Paris Friday morning and then leave for LA back on Sunday.
Too many time zones, Buff. Way too many time zones. I can't even do the math.
It's crazy. Hey, listen, Derek Carr, you know, he's no longer with the Raiders. New Orleans Saints picked him up 4 years, $150 million.
Is he going to be their starter or the backup?
I have to think he's got to be the starter, right?
I would think.
$150 million, he better be the starter.
Yeah, it's so hard. I just, in my brain, automatically thought that Drew Brees was still there, but he has retired. He was such a longtime Saint. So, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. And did you see that Red Sox star, Justin Turner, get drilled in the face by a fastball and needed 16 stitches?
Oh, my God.
Got drilled in the face.
And he was okay? Like, just the stitch? I mean, 16 stitches I guess is nothing he's to okay, scoff at, but I mean,
a lot of swelling. There's no fractures. All the scans are clear, but 16 stitches. You know, think about all the baseball we've seen over the years. And it's kind of like kids riding bikes with helmets today, where we never wore helmets when we were kids.
Oh, dude.
I'd wear a helmet from this point forward, Justin. Yeah. I'd wear one with that thing going over across my mouth.
You have to at this point. I mean, I remember playing baseball, Little League baseball. They made us all wear helmets, right? But like when you're playing, you know, sandlot ball in the yard with your buddies, like, I mean, I never got hit in the head, but I can't tell you how many times it took, you know, fastballs to the back and things like that. We never had any sort of protection on. I've never even worn a bicycle helmet. I don't even know what that feels like.
I've worn, you know, my, like, now wear one when I go out riding or whatever, but I never wore one before. I remember when I was in sandlot ball one time, the worst thing that happened, well, I was a catcher in Little League and I caught the ball in the wrong place and the coach gave me a cup after the game, not before the game.
Oh,
it
yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Similar. So I was a catcher too, Bruce. Have you ever taken one of these? You get the foul ball that goes underneath your glove and comes back up behind the cup.
Yep.
I mean, that is the worst thing I have ever experienced.
Not fun at all. And then one time I was standing at the plate and I swang back the bat. And when the pitch came and the guy behind me, the catcher, was standing up and my bat went right into his stomach.
Why was he standing?
I don't know. It was like the dumbest thing. I mean, I had no idea he was standing. I'm just reacting to the pitch.
You're going to probably feel guilty about that, but that's on him.
Oof, that totally, totally. I think anyway, whatever he did, he did.
Did he cry? Because there's no crying in baseball. Tom Hanks told me
groaned and fell to the ground. Let's put it that way.
I mean, yeah, I would too.
Okay. Couple collectible issues here. Breaking Bad, Walter White. You saw Breaking Bad, right?
Oh, of course. Great series.
His famous white undies, his tidy whiteies.
Yeah.
They're up for auction.
How much? It shouldn't be six figures. It can't be six figures.
They figure around $5,000.
Okay. Thank God. Thank God.
Why?
Why? I mean, this is the first time I've ever heard anyone being interested in men's underwear. Normally it's,
it's a hugely popular show, but I mean, come on, whatever. I guess if you like it, do it. Now, more than likely, this is worth it. Kobe Bryant signed MVP jersey, just sold for $5.8 million.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. Totally. It's a lot of money, but that makes sense. And that's going to be worth $10 million in 10 years.
And I want to end the show on what I think is a feel good story.
Before we get to that, I want to talk a little UFC 285 with you.
Go ahead.
Mind. I texted you after the introduction of Valentina Shevchenko and Alexa Grasso.
Thank you for that, by the way.
I mean, it was phenomenal. It was a night where the energy was there. Don't get me wrong. You were given the energy all you could and all you normally do. But there was energy in the building before the fights even started, and you elevated that even more. And the co-main event felt like it was the main event. And I don't text you often, but, you know, I was in our spot above the sort of everything for extra rounds. And yeah, it was crazy. And then, I mean, what was crazier is Valentina Shevchenko makes one tiny little mistake and Alexa Grasso capitalizes and takes her back and chokes her out. Something that she had been drilling. There's some video of that, which, by the way, makes it crazy to me that any athlete says, I don't watch tape of my opponents. Well, you should, because
you should, you know, and that's proof in the pudding right there. And I did see the fact that she was training for that. She accepted, she grabbed the opportunity. I've said numerous times on the show in my training, my thoughts about fighting, you never want to turn your back on an opponent, but a spinning back kick, just like Joe Rogan, you throw him real quick. That used to be one of my kicks too, because you can really nail somebody perfect, but if you miss,
yeah, you're vulnerable. Screwed. Yeah. And to me, I mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong. You've trained more of this style of fighting than I ever have, but it seemed like Valentina was too close to her to throw that kick.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I agree with you. I mean, another 6 inches would have made all the difference in the world.
Yeah. A couple things though, on Grasso, I called her fights an Invicta before she got to the UFC. It was special for me to see her, you know, get that title. She was a huge underdog. But what a crazy time it is to be a Mexican mixed martial arts fan. There are three reigning champions right now. You got Yair Rodriguez, the interim king at 145. Brandon Moreno, you know, who kicked it all off, multiple time UFC champion at this point at 125. And now at 125 on the women's side, Alexa Grasso. This was a country that the UFC wanted badly to get into. And, you know, times were different back in the early 2000s, and they were trying to get Tito Ortiz to speak Spanish, and that wasn't working well. But man, to see Yair and Brandon Moreno and now Alexa Grasso realize their ultimate goals here in mixed martial arts and become UFC champions, it's just a special time in combat sports and mixed martial arts for Mexicans.
It's hard to speak about yourself in the third person when you speak Spanish. I can understand Tito's issue. But you know what the great thing about that is that, you know, Latino fans are such fight fans that it's doing nothing but bringing eyeballs to the UFC.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, I've gone to Mexico a lot over the last, you know, 2-3 years with Eddie Bravo and Combat Jiu-Jitsu. And, you know, they're loving it. The Jiu-Jitsu scene has blown up in Cancun because of the tournaments there. And we're starting to see, you know, some local athletes in Cancun compete with some of the best jiu-jitsu players in the world. And that just wasn't something that I thought was going to be capable in the short amount of time that they've had to sort of get ready. But the other thing, I mean, John Jones, I hate to say this, Bruce, did we learn anything about John Jones at heavyweight? Because he didn't get hit. That was my biggest question. Can he get hit? You know, and he didn't have to go later in the fight to see if he can carry that weight well. Like, we didn't find out anything.
No, we did not. What we did find out, what I found out, like I said on the show last week, the moment he claws up the steps and does a single hand cartwheel in the octagon, I'll realize that he still had the fluidity,
right?
Which he did, right?
Yeah.
And we haven't seen that yet, but if there's anybody that's going to show it, it's going to be Stipe Miocic when they fight.
I mean, I thought Ciryl Gane was going to test his chin. He didn't. Stipe, another candidate.
Did exactly what he's supposed to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Immobilize Ciryl Gane as fast as he could.
Let me ask you this. We talk a lot about the evolution of athletes. We've had John on the show. You've warned him about some pitfalls that he, you know, unfortunately experienced in his career. Now at 35 years old, statistically speaking, the greatest who's ever entered the octagon and put on a pair of mixed martial arts gloves, in my opinion.
For fighting, not as a role model, but for fighting. Right.
No, 100%. And if you bring in the role model factor, that's the knock as to why he might not be the GOAT. But at 35 years old, the way he handled his business, I mean, I don't want to forecast misfortune for John Jones, but do you think that he's in a better place to understand the do's and don'ts of being a star like he is?
I gathered that. I think that he's had plenty. Listen, if he hasn't, then he's made a big mistake, okay? Because he's had all the time in the world to realize how to not redo his past issues,
right,
and mistakes. So now he should be practicing that. He did go to the after party,
right?
Which Dana kind of was like, he's having an after party.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have self-discipline, like I do,
right?
And I was at that after party. I was having dinner at Hakkasan, and I went over. I said, if John wins, I'll come over, and, you know, because I appear at Hakkasan,
right?
And I went up and gave him the big introduction. The crowd loved it.
The one, the only.
And by the way, I've only said that once before. I said that for Conor McGregor and John. 27 plus years. I've only said that twice.
But that's special. That's a very strong statement when you say something like that.
Yeah, which is why I save it for when needed. But I felt totally comfortable saying it. John was handling himself fine. I mean, people can speculate whatever they want. He was at his after party.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. He was fine. He wasn't going crazy. He was doing great. After his win in the Octagon, it was funny. I don't think they showed it on TV. But I went over to congratulate him and gave me a big hug. And then he grabs my hand and he starts dancing with me in the Octagon.
There you go.
And he goes, come on, dance with me. Dance with me. He's moving his hips. I'm going, getting a little uncomfortable here, John.
Right. He's having fun, though. Top of the world. And he should fun. Be. I mean, the way that he handled Surreal Gone, it just, that was mind blowing. You know, I mean, I said it to you. I thought we were going to see a Gone victory early or a Jones victory late. And man, I couldn't have been more wrong. That was short work.
I don't know how the bookies did on the betting action, but we'll see. But anyway, congratulations to John. Look, the man's lost, by my guesstimate, 30, 40, 50 million, not fighting, between sponsorships and everything he could have made in the last 3 years or whatever.
Right.
They reportedly that he got a $3 million purse, pay-per-view cut. Easily, it's going to be over $10 million is my guess. Let him make his money. The question is, how much longer do you think he's going to want to fight? And the thing I'm thinking is that he's going to establish himself, Stipe. I only think we're going to see John fight, my guess, I think maybe 2 or 3 more years, Max.
Maybe. I saw some people speculating that he might get 3 fights in this year and then just call it a career.
3 fights this year?
Yeah. I mean, he's on pace to do that. If he fights in July,
he could fight. Do it considering what happened. Yeah.
Right. You know, if he gets in and out quickly in July, no reason he couldn't do, you know, fall or December. We think of it as stars, as, you know, for stars to fight 3 times in the year being a tall task, but there are regional prospects, and granted, they're not fighting the same level of competition, but there are regional guys that are fighting 3, 4, 5 times a year. It's not unheard of. It is when you're making the kind of money that John Jones is, but that's almost more of an incentive to try to get in there as many times as you can.
In the golden age of boxing, they were fighting every 2 months. Sugar Ray Robinson, who's many considered to be the greatest boxer of all time, and Jake LaMotta fought like twice in 4 months.
I mean, Jeremy Horn was fighting in the Midwest twice a weekend.
Anybody have more fights than Jeremy Horn? Come on.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if Jeremy knows how many fights he's had, honestly.
Probably not. Well, anyway, this show's been really good. I love having the boxing aspect on the show.
I think we're going to get more of it because, again, Fight Pass has been this platform for not just mixed martial arts, but combat sports as a whole. And, Callum has been holding it down on the boxing side. Coming up on Saturday, by the way, Polaris, which is a grappling league on UFC Fight Pass, they've got a show coming up. And former UFC champ Chris Weidman is grappling and appearing there. So, tune in for that. But I love the idea of more combat sports getting the attention that they deserve. On Fight Pass, and Dana's a big boxing guy. Like, obviously, he is the leader of the Ultimate Fighting Championship, and maybe at times had to point out some of the poor areas of boxing, and where they've gone bad in business, and at times, I hate to say it, but at times, as a mixed martial arts fan, trying to appeal to people that were saying it was the human cockfighting. You had to point out how dangerous boxing is, because boxing is dangerous, Bruce. I still to this day, when I've called fights, the worst knockouts I've ever seen are boxing. I mean, they're much deeper. In mixed martial arts, you get flash, you get KO'd, you might take a couple of unnecessary shots on the floor, but 9 out of 10 times, you're kind of up quick going, what happened? In boxing, it is a much different story.
No matter how you cut it, you're punched in the face until you fall down. You get a count of 10 to get up, to get punched in the face till you fall down.
Right.
You get a 10 count to get up until you get knocked out.
And that's why
that's
boxing
not what
is
in mixed martial arts.
And that's why boxing is built the way it is on a business standpoint.
And
what I mean?
It used to be, sorry about that.
So no, go ahead. Go ahead.
It used to be the 5 or more boxers a year died in the ring and in training.
Right.
We still, aside from the 2, maybe 3 deaths that have occurred in the sport of mixed martial arts due to whatever reason, we've never had a death. We've had serious injuries, but we've never had a death in the Octagon.
Right. And all combat sports are dangerous. You know what I mean? I think we're past
baseball's dangerous. People have died in every sport,
I know. I know.
It is what it is.
Right.
Thank you, Dana White, because not only are you a maverick, you're a reinvigorator. What I mean by that is he reinvigorated mixed martial arts and the UFC and took it from the spectacle that went to having at best 1500 people in an audience, because we were off TV thanks to, you know, Senator McCain, who I'm very respectful of Senator McCain, but it was his thing that did it. To the point of reinvigorating it, he's invigorating boxing, right, with his with Fight Pass and giving it the avenues to get, and even slap fights, which is not the only slap fight event. I heard there were like six other events. You know, he's taken an event that's kind of been teeter tottering,
right,
and he's invigorating it.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them, and you know, whether or not you agree with it, I mean, you know, the thing that Dana says commonly, especially when people sort of criticize sort of those offbeat pay-per-view weekends where maybe the card's not a stack, you know, you got a good main event, but you know, you're kind of learning, you know, everyone else on the card. Dana said this multiple times. If you don't like it, don't watch. I'm not making you watch everything. You don't have to watch.
Change the channel, baby.
Yeah. And that's the thing too, is, you know, you might not know who's in the co-main event on a UFC fight night card today, but you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 fights down the road, you might want to start paying attention because they might be fighting a guy like John Jones. You know what I mean? That's how this works. And
how many times have we seen it? Getting back to John Jones before we sign off.
Yeah.
One thing that just grinds my gears.
Okay.
In the great words of Homer Simpson, is Ngannou not being in the UFC, because John Jones and Ngannou fighting for the heavyweight championship would probably be the biggest pay-per-view ever.
Well, what bothered me is Francis tweeted, you know, at John, saying something along the lines of like, good job, Johnny signed the heavyweight king. They could have come to an agreement. It bothers me that Francis makes that comment, because he could have come to an agreement. Maybe he wasn't happy and he, you know, standing up for whatever he wants, but to come back and then sort of like drum up that, like, Francis, you have the opportunity.
I like Francis so much as a human being and as a fighter. You know how disappointed I am.
Right.
And that I would just wish he would have stayed in the UFC. I don't want to wake up in 6 months and see him not being as relevant as he was and is today.
I mean,
right. He better make the right choice.
Here's the issue, Bruce. We're talking about Francis right now because of John Jones. And, you know, I've heard some talks about him maybe taking a boxing match. That's fine. And I want him to go do that. There's going to be an opportunity for him to come back. Right. But the bottom line is this, focus on what you're doing, because what's the point of that tweet? Is that a sign that Dana should call him back and try to figure something out? If so, then, you know, maybe reach out. But until he's ready to come back, like, just unfortunately, I mean, I hate to say this right now, mixed martial arts rankings wise, Francis Ngannou is still probably the best heavyweight in the world, but that has taken a serious step back. And the next time John fights, it's going to take another step back, because if Stipe wins and beats John Jones, Stipe just beat the greatest of all time. So now he's statistically already the best heavyweight we've ever seen. He beats John Jones, and that's another step back for Francis. And, you know, the bottom line is, if you're going to be the best in any weight class in mixed martial arts, A, you have to be fighting, which Francis is not doing right now, but B, you have to be getting wins over quality opponents in those people that put you in that number one spot in any weight class, Bruce. They fight in the octagon. And if you're not fighting in the octagon, you're going to fade away.
If you're not fighting in the octagon, you're not real.
I mean, it's very hard. You know, back when there were more sort of competitors that were trying to take on the UFC, it was very hard for any of their fighters to break into the top 10, because you can't get to the top level if you're not fighting top opponents, and the top opponents are in the UFC.
I agree. And most of the eyeballs are on the UFC, with all respect to the other fine organizations out
there. Yeah, I'm not even talking about money, you know, and sponsorships and things like that. Like, that's going to start to take a step back for Francis as well.
Here's another thing.
Yeah.
And then let's end the show. I got to go train for a couple hours. It's been now 2 months or so since Francis announced leaving the UFC.
Right. Yeah.
Scott Coker, who I like a lot, worked with Scott, fine businessman. Nothing bad to say about Scott Coker. He takes good care of his people. He said there's an offer on the table. An offer to be made. Jake Paul says Showtime and PFL are ready to make an offer. Where are these offers? I want to hear an offer made. It's been 2 months or more.
Right.
I mean, you don't wait 6 months to accept a deal. If offers are on the table, stay friggin' relevant. You understand what I mean by relevant?
No, right. But here's the issue, Bruce. You're going to find out that Francis is going to get those offers, and those offers are going to pay him less than what he was getting in the UFC. So why fight mixed martial arts if you're not getting what you were in the UFC?
Then you go for the Tyson Fury fight and you take your pick and you wind it back in the octagon.
I mean, that's the goal. Am I incorrect on that? Like, I've heard some rumors about Anthony Joshua. Like, I mean, if he doesn't box and he does end up somewhere fighting MMA, I mean, it'd be hard for me to believe that that deal makes better sense than the UFC, but I don't know. I'm not Francis.
I can't argue that point, but we're not inside that, you know, that room while they talk. So
wish him well. I mean, I like Francis.
Yeah, you know, I wish him well. I like him too. And I want to, Francis kind of guy that can make $20 million, say, done, I'm done. I made my money.
Right.
I'm done.
Right. But I mean, right now, John Jones is the heavyweight champion of the UFC. He's the number one ranked heavyweight, number one pound for pound. And there's an argument to be made that those are UFC rankings, and Francis may be higher than John on the MMA rankings, but that argument's going to go away quick if he's not fighting.
Can't comment any more than that. TJ said it perfectly. All right, TJ, let's sign off. What's up?
Let's see here. Next week, we're going to have to get clever with how we do the show. I'll be in Boston, but I'm sure we can figure it out. You know, Colin Callum's fight. But this weekend, I'm doing extra rounds immediately following the card that features a pretty fun bantamweight fight atop it. His former champion, Piotr Jan, takes on the up-and-comer with momentum on his side, the Ray Longo trained Murad Dwalishvili. I'm excited for that fight. You know, Jan lost to Aljamain Sterling the last time they met. And, you know, Murad is obviously a training partner of Aljo. That will be interesting to see if, you know, sort of the game plan from Sterling can be implemented by Dwalishvili. And, you know, for Piotr Jan, he's coming off a fight against Sean O'Malley that a lot of people thought he won. He didn't. He's lost three of his last four. He hasn't lost a lot of fights in his career. I think he's only lost four fights in his career. So he's definitely going to have the urgency to put on a show. And it's going to be a fun fight Saturday night in Las Vegas.
Very cool. I won't be announcing. Joe Martinez will be stepping in the octagon Saturday night. I will see you all in London next week. Very exciting show in London. We're looking forward to that one. And with that being said, it's been an excellent show. We had an excellent show. I think it was an excellent show.
It was
an
excellent show.
And I enjoyed you, yeah. TJ.
You're not being ridiculous by saying it was an excellent show. It was.
It was. Everybody, set your goals. Write them down. So when you step on that yellow brick path to your future, you be the best you can be and perform at your best. Whether you're champion, number one, number two, or 10, it doesn't matter. Be your best, and then you're winning. And that's what we're all about on It's Time Radio. Have a great week. Have a wonderful weekend. I will see you next week with another exciting guest. And you too, TJ. And then it's off to jolly old England. Can't wait to get there. It's going to be awesome. O2 Arena. They go crazy.
Don't speak like that in England. You'll get beat up real quick.
What's that?
Don't talk like that in England. You'll get beat up.
Oh, it's okay. They don't beat me up. It's all
okay. Yeah. All right.
And if they do, then hey, let's drink some green beer and go for it.
All right. There you go.
St. Paddy's Day in England. I can't believe I'm going to be in St. Paddy's Day. I'm just joking around with it. I love
the UK. Live it up a little bit.
No, it's all good. It's all good. It's just some of the greatest fight fans in the world, man. It's so much fun announcing at the O2 Arena. I can't wait to be there.
Yeah.
It's really, really cool. Pardon my lousy English accent. Everybody have a great week.
Cheerio.
Cheerio. Bye-bye.
There you go.
Buffer out.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on Auto Trader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.